going for everybody. That's great. That's what I want to hear. So thank you all for coming. How many people have heard me speak before? Okay. How many people have heard me speak about cryptos before? Okay, there's going to be a lot of new stuff in here because I got a chance to get into CIA for the second time in my life this year, courtesy of CNN, so I'm going to be sharing a bunch of new information. No, we still don't know the answer to part four, but we do have some new clues, so I'll definitely be sharing all of that. So for those who are hearing me for the first time, welcome. Glad you're here. I love having lots of new eyes and new ears on Unsolved Codes because I believe that the answer to one of these may come from an idea that comes out of left field. Could be someone who's never worked on codes, could be a little kid. But I like having lots of fresh eyes on things. So my name's Ilanka Dunin. By trade, I am a game developer. I've made a bunch of games, I've gotten some awards, Game of the Year award, and I've been making games. I've been in the game industry for going on about 30 years now, and I've been coming to Dragon Con for about 20 years. And Dragon Con, you guys are my homies, Dragon Con has really changed my life. It has provided the things that have, where one thing leads to another thing leads to another thing. And so my cryptography career started actually at Dragon Con 2000. I think I got the old logo there for Dragon Con. And what it was is I was speaking about computer games in the electronics track. And as speakers here at Dragon Con, you get to know other speakers, you're at the track, at the end of the day, you have a beer. And other speakers in the same track, in the EFF track, were hackers that were coming in and giving talks about security and how people should lock up their computers so that the bad guys couldn't get in. And through these hackers, I heard about this thing called the Freaknik 3 code, Freaknik version 3.0 code, that had been created as a challenge to the attendees at a hacker convention in Nashville, Tennessee, called Freaknik. And no one had cracked it at Freaknik 3. So the hackers were here at DragonCon and were handing out flyers with this code on it, the Freaknik 3 code, saying, hey, if anybody can crack it, you win prizes. You get a free trip to a hacker convention, free hotel, free drinks, free t-shirts, for everything. And I picked it up with all the other stuff you get at a convention. And I took it home with me to St. Louis, where I was living at the time. And it took me 10 days, but I cracked it. And I won the prize. And then I went around cracking a bunch of other codes in the hacker scene. And I actually cracked so many codes that I was banned from competition in the hacker scene. Like at the AtlantaCon hacker convention, they released their code on a sheet of paper, and at the bottom of the paper it said, note, past puzzle solvers are ineligible for prizes associated with the AtlantaCon code. Give someone else a chance, Ilanka. So I cracked that one too. And in these codes, in the Freaknik 3 code, it was really written like an onion, so you had to peel off the different pieces of the code, and there were dead ends and there were red herrings in it. And one of the dead ends was a URL, a website address, to the CIA website, which had a picture of this sculpture called Kryptos. So that was the first place I heard about Kryptos. And I took a look at it, and what is Kryptos? And I found out it was a sculpture that had four different codes or ciphers on it. Three had been cracked so far, and then the fourth one had not been cracked, and it was considered to be one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. This is what it looks like, and 97 characters. And so as I'm solving the Freaknik 3 code, I'm like, oh, solve this next. Famous unsolved code. All right, so it was one of the dead ends. Then I went back to the Freaknik 3 code and got to the rest of it. And then after I cracked the Freaknik 3 code, I actually wrote a whole tutorial on it that I put on the web, and have moved it around to different URLs as the web keeps changing. As a side note, the person who had written the Freaknik 3 code had not made the connection that the code might be solved by a woman. And so there was a, when I got to the very center of the Freaknik 3 code, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning or something, and it said, congratulations, you've gotten to the center. Now you need to post an announcement of your win to this hacker mailing list. It was called root@se2600.org, Southeastern United States, 2600.org. And I needed to post a message in haiku or sonnet format and announce my win. I needed to do it with the theme of why I liked to go swimming with bow-legged women and swim between their legs. I was like, what? So I did come up with something. The guy who wrote the code is a guy named Johnny X, who is a regular here at Dragon Con. And so I wrote it in haiku format, which is, you know, 5 syllables, 7, 5. And so I wrote, Johnny X and I will discuss things aquatic if he wears a suit. So that was my announcement of the win, and it took him a month to respond, but he finally did, and then I won all the prizes, and then I went out cracking a bunch of other codes. So it was all just kind of fun and games at that point. But then something very serious happened, something very sad happened, which was September 11th. And this is a picture of the Pentagon there, and I have a cousin who works in D.C., works occasionally at the Pentagon, and he actually had a close call on that morning. He was having printer problems. And he got his printer problems fixed, and then he's on his way to the Pentagon to give a briefing, and he was checking his cell phone for messages, and his phone actually crashed from all the messages from people that were saying, a plane just hit the Pentagon, don't go. And the it hit where he was going to be. So some of the people he was supposed to brief were killed. And horrible, horrible day. And I went out a couple months later to hug my cousin. And then we went to the Pentagon and we put an American flag there. And then he said, this is your first time in D.C. Is there anything else you'd like to see? And I said, well, no, just you. And he said, well, that's nice, I like seeing you too. But it's, you know, there's kind of a lot of touristy things to see in D.C. Is there anything you'd like to see? And I said, well, I've heard about this sculpture called Kryptos. Maybe we could go take a look at it. He said, okay, where is it? And I said, well, it's kind of in the center of CIA headquarters. In Langley, Virginia. And he said, well, okay, let's figure it out. And this was a time where you couldn't just type in directions to CIA into the internet. There was no street address for the CIA. And so I kind of had to poke around, and I sort of knew what the building looked like. You know, this is from Tom Clancy movies where they look down at CIA, the location. And I knew it was in Langley, Virginia. And so I kind of poked around and got some satellite pictures of the Langley, Virginia area and looked for this building. And aha, okay, that very distinctive shape of the building. And so my cousin and I would figure we were going to drive over there. We were just going to like find a service road, like drive around CIA. And it didn't work like that. We went down the highway and we took the exit, and all of a sudden, there's no service road. There's a gate with big walls of barbed wire and a guard shack with a bunch of guards pouring out, holding guns, and asking a very reasonable question right after September 11th attacks, which is, who are you and why are you here? And we said, we're just here to see the crypto sculpture. And they kind of relaxed a little bit and, sorry, you can only get in with official business only. And my cousin and I look at each other and we're like, can we talk our way into CIA? And so we start like, we're really interested, and can we just get in to see the sculpture? And the guard said, no, official business only. We're thinking like, well, can we get an invite from like our congressperson? And the guard said, no, official business only. And we're like, is there like a family day? We could like pretend to be someone's cousin. And the guard like, no, official business only. So finally my cousin and I, we drove away, and I'm thinking like, official business only. And so now there's another part of my life going on, which is I was wondering if I could use all my experience with codes to help with the war on terrorism. So I did have contact with the FBI in St. Louis at the time. And because I had all this game company, and we had people were giving us credit cards because it was online games, and every so often they'd give us a fraudulent credit card numbers. So I'd be talking to the FBI and I'd say, hey, you know, war on terrorism, can I help? And they'd say no. And so then, every time I talked to them, I'd say, can I help? Can I help? And finally, I got an agent who says, well, what is it you know about? And I said, oh, you know, I cracked all these codes on the hacker scene, and, you know, I've done, you know, PGP and UU encoding and steganography and binary. And they said, wait, steganography. And I said, yeah, steganography. Steganography, by the way, is hiding a message inside of a picture. So you see the picture, but there's actually something hidden in the bits and bytes. And he said, the agent said, we've been hearing rumors that Al-Qaeda might have been using steganography as a way of planning the September 11th attacks. Now, we're sure that there's big brains out in the Washington, D.C. area that know about steganography, but we're here in St. Louis. Cryptography really isn't our mission. So maybe you could kind of come in and give a little talk about what steganography is. And I said, cool, I'd love to do that. And I think they thought I was going to come in and give a 10-minute talk, but I did like a 70-slide PowerPoint presentation about steganography. And while I was putting the talk together, I was thinking, that thing in the back of my mind, official business only. Maybe I can use this talk as a way of getting into CIA. And so one of the slides I needed to do in my talk was, here's a picture of something without anything hidden in it, and here's a picture of that same thing with something hidden in it. What picture should I use? Should I picture of a flower or a beach, or maybe I'll use a picture of crypto, so, you know, the CIA sculpture. So I downloaded this picture from the CIA website, and I hid something in it on my own computer. And then in a slide, I said, okay, here's cryptos without something hidden, here's cryptos with something hidden. So now I have this picture, and I gave it to the FBI, and they loved it. And all around St. Louis, I gave it to the Secret Service and postal inspectors, and just all kinds of, you know, attorney general and all kinds of agencies there. And it was a big hit. And every time I gave the talk and I showed that slide, I'd say, boy, you know, I'd love to give this talk at CIA someday. So I was trying to get a contact, right? And didn't work with anybody in St. Louis. But I gave a talk in Las Vegas at a convention called DEF CON. How many people here know what DEF CON is? Okay, so DEF CON is like the biggest hacker convention in the world. You got hackers coming in from all over the place. And I went to the speaker room at DEF CON and I said, hey, I have this great talk on steganography. It's being really well received. I could be an alternate speaker. And they said, okay. And so then I'd never spoken at DEF CON before. And so then I'm kind of wandering around and seeing the talks at DEF CON. And I was at a talk, I think, on NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And I got the call saying, hey, somebody else canceled. We'd love you to give your talk about steganography. And I'm like, great. And then my heart's going boom, 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 boom. Because at some conventions, if you give a talk and you don't get a good, you don't know what you're talking about, people, you know, they'll give you a nice little golf clap, you know, and send you on your way. Not like that at a hacker convention. If they think you don't know what you're talking about, they will boo you off the stage. They will throw things at you. They, like ShmooCon has these shmoo balls that they'll throw at you. They hand them out when you register. Here's a shmoo ball. If you don't like the speaker, throw it at the speaker. So, it's a thing. And so I was like, oh my God, I hope this is, you know, I hope my talk is up to snuff. And I gave the talk. It was well received. I actually got a standing ovation. And while I was giving the talk, I showed the slide. I said, boy, I'd love to give this talk at CIA someday. So end of the talk, people come up to you and they give you business cards and things. And then one person came up and they leaned across the podium and they looked me in the eye and they said, I work at Langley. I think I can get you in. So someone undercover that was at DEF CON just blew their cover. So I wanted to make sure that they were really CIA, they weren't just a hacker pulling my chain. And so they gave me a first name and a phone number. And later on, I called the number and I'd sit and I said, hey, I'm willing to come give the talk at CIA as long as I get a chance to see cryptos. And they said, okay, send us your slides. And I said, wait a minute, you got to prove to me that you're really CIA. And they said, how can I do that? And I said, well, send me an email from an official CIA address. And they said, well, I don't have an email from an official CIA address. And I said, well, get an email from an official CIA address. And a week or two went by, and then I got an email. It was from their name at UCIA.gov, which is unclassified CIA.gov. I wrote back to it to make sure that it was a real email address. They weren't just spoofing, so we had two-way communication. And then I sent them my slides. And they said, okay, come on in. How much do you want to be paid? And I said, I don't want to be paid. I just want the chance to see cryptos. And they said, well, we have to pay you. And so then I was like, oh my God, what do I ask for? Because if I ask for too much, then they'll say no, and then I won't get a chance to see cryptos. And you know, they're insisting. I was agonizing about this. I was asking everybody, what should I ask for? And finally I said, look, I just want, I'm going to be staying with my cousin. I don't need a hotel. Maybe I'll need a rental car. Cover my airfare. So $500. But if that's too much, it's okay. You know, give me a lower amount. And so then they came back and said, okay, you're going to come in to see cryptos, and we're going to pay you $2,500. So this is me negotiating with the government for your tax dollars. I'm just saying. Okay? So I got into CIA, and I got a chance to see cryptos. And so it was like, woo, achievement unlocked. Right? I got in, and while I was there, I was like, well, okay, what else should I do? Because I hadn't really worked on cryptos at that point. This is 2002, by the way. So I took some rubbings of the sculpture. Each one of these is a kind of on an 8.5 by 11 inch piece of paper. And so it kind of gives you an idea of the size of the letters that are there. And then I took those home with me to St. Louis. They made a mess in my suitcase. And then I thought, well, maybe somebody else might want to see these. And so I scanned them. They made a mess in my scanner. And I put them online with a kind of like an early blog. You know, this is Ilanka's visit to CIA in October 2002. And I put the rubbings there and kind of some links to other places around the web. And then that web page changed my life because people started writing to me from all over the place saying, oh, you saw cryptos, what did it look like, and who's the artist, and just all these questions. And I'm kind of a helpful person, so I started making an FAQ about all these questions people were getting, what the answers are, and about the artist. People were asking me, like, who made it, and I said, a guy named Jim Sanborn, and they say, well, what else has he made? And I'm like, I don't know, and so I contacted his agent. I said, can you give me a list of everything Sanborn's ever done? And the agent said, no, there's no such list. It would be impossible to make a list of everything Sanborn's ever done. Sort of like official business, right? You know, it's impossible. So all of a sudden, boom, I have a new thing that I have to do. So I'll make a list of everything Sanborn's ever done. So I contacted all the art galleries in St. Louis I could think of, and then I kind of widened until I found an art gallery that had Sanborn's artwork in one of their exhibits. And there, I called them up and I said, hey, Sanborn was there in 1999. And do you have any programs left from when he was there? They go, oh yeah, we got 20 of them in the back. Would you like one? We'd be happy to send one to you. So they sent one to me, and I looked, and on the back of it said, Sanborn has also shown art at the following, you know, galleries. So then I could call those galleries and do the same thing. So I'm like collecting all this information about Sanborn and building my website. And then I get a phone call from Jim Sanborn, and he's not happy. And he's like, who are you and why do you have a web page about me? And so I'm kind of like, hey, no, cool, I'm a big fan and I like your stuff. And so now we're friends, and I've been over to his house, and I have a much larger website, and I've been asked to give talks about the site, and I've been asked to write books about codes, and that's a whole other thing. And it all kind of ties into Dan Brown, who wrote a book called The Da Vinci Code. Ties into that as well. But let me pause here for a moment. I know Scott here wanted to interrupt because he wants to request donations for the DragonCon's American Heart Association. And I'm going to fiddle with things because I'm going to be showing you a video. By the way, did you know DragonCon over its 32 years has collected over $1 million in charity? So you can be part of that. So. All right, Ray, are we good for sound? You're not gonna blow people's ears out? Okay. Scott, did you have any announcements you wanted to make?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll let Scott do his thing and then I'll start the video.
So I am Scott Jones. I'm the director of the Electronic Frontiers Forums track at DragonCon. This year we are collecting for the American Heart Association. If you have, way to go. If you have some spare change or an extra dollar or so that you could put in, I'm going to send the collection bucket around. If you could put something in, we would greatly appreciate it. And I thank you.
Thank you, Scott. All right, let's
Let's see if this works.
This is a 6.5 minute video. This is this year, CNN, through their Great Big Story division, had heard about me because of another code called the Cicada Cipher. And while they were interviewing me about Cicada Cipher, their camera guy was sitting in my home looking around and seeing all the crypto stuff that was on the walls and thinking, we need to do a special on cryptos. And things went back and forth with their producer for about 2 years. And then earlier this year, the producer, Drew Beeb, contacted me and he said, hey, Ilanka, we got permission to get into CIA again to see cryptos. Would you like to go with us to see the cult sculpture? To which my answer was, let me think about it, yes. And so they did a great job. So let me show you their video.
This is a story about a puzzle called Cryptos, and one woman who spent almost 2 decades trying to solve it. In the heart of the CIA headquarters lies a mystery. Okay, probably more than one mystery, but this one is weird because it's meant to be solved. It's a sculpture containing an encoded message that's a challenge to the CIA employees. But for 30 years, no one has been able to figure out what it says. If anyone's got a shot, it's Ilanka Dunin. I mean, just listen to her.
When my friends and family ask me what I want for Christmas, I tell them to get several puzzles, mix all the pieces together, and then just give me a bag of pieces. I enjoy seeing order come out of chaos.
When Ilanka's not solving jigsaw puzzles, she's cracking codes, and she's good at it. The Da Vinci Code's author even named a character after her, Nola Kay. I mean, it's an anagram, but, you know, that's the kind of thing puzzle people do. One day, Ilanka ran into a code that finally stumped her.
I first heard about cryptos, I think, in late 2000. It is about 12 feet tall and 20 feet long. It has thousands of characters carved into it. Cryptos has 4 codes in it. 3 of the 4 have been solved. The 4th has not been solved, and it is considered to be one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. Here we are going on 30 years, and it still hasn't been cracked.
Ilanka and cryptanalysts around the world have tried every technique in the book. Polyalphabetic substitution, transposition, Playfair, binary, Morse. But the 4th code, only 97 characters long, it doesn't give an inch. It just sits there, right in front of us, unsolved.
So it raises a question of why. Why is it that this artist, Jim Sanford, who had never created a code before in his entire life, how could he have designed something that has stumped the entire code-breaking world?
Welcome to the island of Jim Sanford. He is the artist who made cryptos, and he's the only person on Earth who knows the solution.
The code itself is a safe deposit box. That's pretty much where it stays. In the late 1980s, the CIA was required that they have a sculpture. I was ultimately selected to do the work on the exterior of the building. So I chose to do a piece using encoded text. Through this copper screen, I cut with jigsaws by hand almost 2,000 letters, and people have been contacting me continuously daily for 30 years. There is actually a cryptos group that meets every year or so to do everything humanly possible to get me to give them a clue to cryptos.
Our cryptos community is made up of people all around the world. We have thousands of people that are interested in cryptos and either cracking it or helping to see it cracked. Some of them are professional code breakers. Some of them are students. often someone will just come in and toss out an idea, and then there will be some brainstorming. The topography has changed. Has anything changed in terms of the solutions of cryptos because of the changes?
That's a trap question.
Often it's just a case of everyone just wants to listen to every single thing that Jim might say about cryptos, because there's that hope that he will drop that clue, that little hint that'll help.
So if one invested a lot of time in the environment around cryptos, that would be kind of silly. I still have to be very vigilant and extremely poker-faced when everybody wants to know what it says. But I've gotten, after 30 years, fairly good at making it so that I don't flinch or offer them a tell. And so far, so good.
It's been 30 years since cryptos was unveiled at the CIA. And still, people are working to crack that fourth code every single day.
I think every artwork strives to hold your attention for as long as possible. But if it's an artwork that contains something that keeps your attention for even 10 minutes, much less 30 years, I get a great sense of satisfaction from that. It's become part of a many, many people's lives, and I think that's the most important part.
People have asked me if I want to be the one that solves cryptos. And it doesn't have to be me. I want to see it solved. And if I can help by sharing as much information as I know, that's as good to me as having actually cracked the code. If I had to place a bet, cryptos, yes, cryptos will be solved. I couldn't tell you when, but it's a real code, it's a real cipher, it's solved.
Emails from people now, they say, oh yeah, I was walking through this airport at Dulles Airport, and they're showing your video on the screens as you walk past the gate. So on YouTube, it went trending. It's got over 2 million views at this point, so I'm just kind of blown away with what they did. So let me go on and let me tell you more about what crypto says and some of the things we know about it. So, got that. All right, okay. So, 1988, it was commissioned, dedicated in 90. So Sanborn created it. The code systems were designed by the bald-headed man that you saw. That's Ed Scheidt, who was the chairman of the CIA Cryptographic Center. Some information about Sanborn. He'd never done an encrypted sculpture before in his life. But when he got the gig to do cryptos, he did some research about the CIA, decided he wanted to do something with the theme of encryption. Cryptos, by the way, is a Greek word, which means hidden. Now, how famous is Cryptos? People would ask me, how famous is Cryptos? And I go, well, there isn't a list of famous unsolved codes. And okay, I'll make a list of famous unsolved codes. So Ilanka's list of famous unsolved codes. And I try to be as objective as possible. So I put Cryptos as number 5. Other people might put it higher or lower, but I have it as 5. And every year at DragonCon, Scott, the track director of the EFF track, invites me in to give talks. I've given talks about Beale and about Voynich. Dora Beller is just super short, so I kind of include that with other things. Zodiac Killer, I could give a talk on, but it's kind of gruesome stuff, so I don't like to give talks about the Zodiac Killer. And then, ciphers going all the way down. So, being more specific about what is Cryptos, it has 4 panels. 2 of them are what's called a visionaire table, which is a polyalphabetic substitution cipher, where a keyword builds a cipher alphabet. The first key is the word Cryptos. So, who solved the first 3 parts? Well, the first public solving was a guy named Jim Galogli, who was the head of the American Cryptogram Association. And then after that made international news, then the CIA came forward and said, well, we have somebody that solved those first three parts a year ago. An internal CIA analyst did it on his own time, pencil and paper, a guy named David Stein. And then the NSA came forward and said, well, we have people that have solved it, but we're not going to tell you who, and we're not going to tell you when. Right? Very NSA, no such agency. So I kind of dug into that. Okay, NSA guys, who did it? And I did find out that in 1992, they had a four-person team led by a guy named Ken Miller with Dennis McDaniels. The most senior man that you saw in that video was Denny McDaniels, so he was part of that group. So I'm kind of reaching out and saying, okay, you solved the first three parts, and you solved the fourth. Is anybody in the, nope, no one solved the fourth yet. So getting more into the Visionaire table, if we're gonna start at that top left-hand corner, and this is gonna be a little easier to read. So you take the letters of Kryptos, you take a full alphabet, then you take the letters of a keyword, in this case the keyword is Kryptos, you put that at the far left, and then the rest of the letters you dump to the right. So you still have 26 letters, they're just kind of scrambled in a very specific way. And in this, you can read the word Kryptos, and if you also read down the left-hand column of the whole thing, you also see the word Kryptos. And that's, in this case, that would be Kryptos in two ways, but we're gonna use a different key to make that part. So Kryptos part one, the top two lines of the sculpture. And on this tableau on the right-hand side, you can see we have Kryptos, but down the left-hand column, instead of the key of Kryptos, we have a key of palimpsest. Palimpsest is a word for something, say you have a message that was written on a scroll, and then you scrape that message off and you write another message on it. So bits of the old message are showing through, palimpsest. You could also use that word for other things, for example, a city, the city of Rome, is a palimpsest, because you could be standing on a street corner seeing modern buildings, but you're also seeing the Colosseum. You're also seeing medieval churches. So you're seeing older buildings showing through the more modern. So that's what palimpsest is. So if we take the ciphertext from Kryptos, the first letters are E-M-U-F-P, right? And I don't know if you can see, is my mouth showing? No. So if you look at the red E and then an M, U, F, P, and you take that top red E and you go up to the indicator alphabet there, you have the letter B. And then you take the letter, red letter M, and you go up and you get the letter E. And so from this E, M, U, F, P, you get B, E, T, W, E, E, N, you get the plaintext word between. So that's English, and you keep going and you'll get the full, with Kryptos and palimpsest, the full plain text, which is between subtle shading and the absence of light, lies the nuance of illusion. That is not a typo on my slide. That is a typo on the sculpture. Though when I asked Sanborn, is it a mistake? He has said, no, it's not a mistake. It's deliberate, but it's the orientation or the positioning. However, this year, he said, well, maybe it is a mistake. So, you know, he keeps giving these different answers. So part two starts with the third line, goes all the way down to the bottom of the plate. This is the ciphertext, and he was very specific. There was an error in this that he announced, which is at the very, very bottom right, there's an S that got left out. He said for aesthetic reasons. And so this one is the same method, but with the keys of, instead of Kryptos and palimpsest, we have Kryptos and abscissa. Abscissa is a mathematical term that means the x-coordinate on a graph. So the plain text for this is, it was totally invisible. How is that possible? They used the Earth's magnetic field, X. The information was gathered and transmitted underground to an unknown location, X. Does Langley know about this? They should. It's buried out there somewhere. X. Who knows the exact location? Only WW. This was his last message. X. 38 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west. We thought it said ID by Rose, but it actually says X, layer 2. Right? Don't know what that means. So part three starts at the top of the bottom plate, goes down to the fourth line from the bottom. This is the ciphertext. Some people may notice it looks a little different because It doesn't have as many Q's and Z's and X's. It has E's and T's and A's. So this is, instead of a substitution system, a transposition system. All of the letters are there, just scrambled in a very specific way. So one way that I figured out is if you put them all into these even rows, and you start at the far right in the middle, you take that S, and then you count down by four, one, two, three, four, and you wrap around to the second column from the right, you have an L, count down another four, you have O, and you keep going. So you get S, L, O, W, L, Y, slowly. And you keep pulling it out like that, and you get these lovely diagonals, right? And you get slowly, desperately. Desperately is misspelled because Sanborn sucks at spelling. And that comes out to slowly, desperately, slowly, the remains of passage debris that encumbered the lower part of the doorway was removed. With trembling hands, I made a tiny breach in the upper left-hand corner. And then, widening the hole a little, I inserted the candle and peered in. The hot air escaping from the chamber caused the flame to flicker, but presently details of the room within emerged from the mist. X, can you see anything? Q. Anyone recognize that? Okay. It's from November 26, 1922, an archaeologist by the name of Howard Carter. It's a paraphrased account of his discovery of King Tut's tomb. And the question, can you see anything? If you read his biography, the answer was yes, wonderful things, or yes, it is wonderful. So Sanborn has said that he liked that from the time he was a boy, the idea of, and he equates it to solving a cipher, that you're sifting away the layers to get down to the actual plain text. So as I was doing research on what else Sanborn had done, making a list of everything Sanborn had ever done, I found out that after creating the CIA version, he had created another sculpture that he called the Untitled Kryptos Piece, which he had sold to a private collector. So I tracked down the private collector in California, and he had placed this piece in his backyard. And I called him up and I said, hi, I'm Ilonka and I'm researching. And I, you know, can I come into your backyard and take pictures? And he said, sure. So I got to see. And what it has is it has all of the text from Kryptos on one side, and on the other side, it's a bunch of Russian text. So also the order in Kryptos, if you numbered the parts 1, 2, 3, 4, on this, the untitled piece, it's numbered 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then I think it stops halfway through 1 or 2. And Sanborn made another piece like that, which is called Antipodes, which is at the Hirshhorn Museum. That's at the bottom right there. It's right outside the big round museum. If you go to Washington, D.C., it's right outside the door. So that Russian text is also on another piece of his that's called the Cyrillic Projector, and that was enciphered as well, but we put together a group and we cracked that part, and the parts are aligned differently. Also, this is a picture of the untitled piece, and there's an area on it where there are two dots. So the letters are identical to what's on Kryptos, but Kryptos does not have dots in those locations, and we're not certain why there are dots. With lots of guesses, but we're not certain. If they were on Kryptos itself, it would be from that top left plate towards the bottom right of that top left plate. So this is also some new stuff that we've been able to get a hold of, is that Sanborn has released pictures of his encoding charts when he created Kryptos. This is how he encrypted it. So you'll see, like, the second section there, we have the word abscissa, which was one of the keys. And so there are arrows going, we could spend like an hour talking just about this chart, but these are pictures that we've obtained. So you can slowly, desperately, slowly is on that chart. And this is probably the second step of the transposition of part three. So those coordinates, 38 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, where do those point to? They point in the general area of CIA headquarters, but not to Kryptos. And anyone who's done geocaching or has played with GPS coordinates knows that 6.5 seconds north, a tenth of a second of latitude, is a very narrow area, about 10 feet across. So it's not 6 seconds, it's not 7 seconds, 6.5 seconds. And so it points in the area of Kryptos. So the sculpture is in that courtyard, outside the cafeteria. The white building is the cafeteria. And so people who are eating can look out the windows and they can see this whole area that Sanborn designed. And the 6.5 seconds north is towards the bottom of that curved area where there's a grassy area. The 6.5 seconds points there, about 150 feet southeast of where Kryptos is. Right, here's another way of looking at it. All of this is public. Also, out front of the new headquarters building, there's some other things that Sanborn has designed, which are these large slabs, like they're coming out of the earth, with Morse code on plates in between the slabs. To give a sense of scale, the bottom one there is a large rock about the size of a bowling ball that is a lodestone. It is a magnetic lodestone. And another piece has a compass rose on it. So there's lodestone there, and then the compass rose is about this big. And we've done things, you know, like where's the compass rose pointing? And he's done like two other pieces that have compass roses, and we've gone to look to see if they, no, they don't. But but we have gone and investigated all of that. Here's another way of looking at it. So Kryptos is at the top left inside the courtyard, and then there's a duck pond, and there's some slabs out there, and then there's slabs outside the entrance to the new headquarters building. One of them is this triangle block. It's about 5 feet in diameter, and I spent a lot of time looking at it when I was earlier this year in March, because it sure looks like it's pointing like an arrowhead. And I went and I was followed it as far as I could. It was March, so the flowers weren't blooming, so I was looking to see if there was anything, but couldn't find anything. So again, just the mystery there. I spent a lot of time talking to Ed Scheit, who designed the crypto systems. He said he did things to mask the English in part four, that we'd solve the first three parts because we have the methods of weighting the English language. We knew, you know, like E is the most common letter and T is the next most common letter. But we solved them without recovering the keys first, but that part four, there was a masking technique of some sort, and we need to figure out that masking technique before we can solve part four. And he said he used a little bit of steganography, so whatever that means. Other things we've noticed is that on the Visionaire Tableau side, if you go down the right-hand column, E-F-G-H-I-L-L. So it should go J-L, but it goes L-L. Why is it two L's? We don't know. And then there's alignment on the top. So the bottom plate, at the top left of the bottom plate, there are some letters that are a little out of alignment. So we asked Sanborn about those this year. So something new is we said, do those letters have anything to do with part four? And he said no, that they're related to 1, 2, 3. Yeah, he says it's not a misalignment. It's much more subtle than that. I can't tell you exactly what that means. I'm just sharing with you what he said. The picture of Kryptos on the left, which is often used in various books and whatnot, he says, that's the ugly side. That's the side view. And we said, well, what's the front view? And that's the one on the right here. That's the front view. That's the proper way. Sanborn gets a big kick out of when he sees pictures of Kryptos in math textbooks, like for kids, because he says he is not a math person. He calls himself an anathemath, I think is the word that he uses. And when we ask him about doing frequency analyses and all these things, he says, no, he doesn't know anything about that. He can't spell, he can't do math, he's not a code person. So how could he have created this cipher? And we think he probably did something weird to it, but we're just not sure. This is also something related to a clue he gave, and I'll get into that in a sec, is that he says that Berlin is a word that is in part four. So we spent a lot of time looking at what could Berlin have to do with Kryptos. And Kryptos was created at about the same time that the Berlin Wall was coming down. And it's possible, we know that there was a Berlin Wall monument, this is a picture of it, that was being designed to be placed at CIA someday. So maybe it was going to be in the area where the latitude and longitude coordinates were going to be placed. We're not sure. So you can see in that courtyard, maybe it was intended to be in that courtyard. Where it actually ended up was outside the buildings where that road is at the very bottom. There's kind of a curve, and that's where it ended up. By the way, before anyone gets too excited about whether or not this is actual Berlin Wall, yes, the slabs are actual Berlin Wall, but when the CIA received them, they were blank. So they hired an artist to paint fake graffiti onto the slabs. If you'll notice, it's all in English, okay? Right, so, yeah, okay. So back to part four, you know how. So moving a little forward in the timeline, we had a discussion group about cryptos, and some people started joining the discussion group saying, hey, have you heard of this book called The Da Vinci Code? Because there's all these mentions of this thing called cryptos. And there's puzzles. If you have the American version of the hardback version of Da Vinci Code, there are 5 puzzles that are hidden in the artwork of the book jacket. There's something that Brown does where he is giving clues to the topic of his next novel. So in this area that looks like a tear, I don't know if you can see it in this lighting, but are the words only WW knows, all right? Which is from part 2 of Cryptos, who knows the exact location, only WW. Though Dan Brown has tried to incorporate this into his own mythology, and when people ask him, what does WW mean? He says, well, maybe it's upside down and it means Mary Magdalene. To which Sanborn said, no. That W isn't 10 was that WW means William Webster, who was the director of the CIA at the time that the sculpture was installed. Also on the back of the Da Vinci Code, very faintly on the left, light red on dark red, are the numbers 37 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west. So here's where my life took another change, is while the Da Vinci Code, a movie, was being made about the novel, and a publisher contacted me and asked me if I would create some ciphers for a book they were working on to come out at the same time as the movie. And I said, sure, I'll make a few ciphers. And then they came back and they said, well, we need more ciphers. Maybe you could contact some of your associates. And I said, okay, sure, I'll contact them. And then the publisher came back and said, well, these are very difficult ciphers. Could you maybe edit that entire chapter on difficult ciphers? And I said, at that point, I dug my heels in and said, wait, what? And are you paying me for this? And then they said, well, really, we want you to write the entire book. So, you know, I ended up writing the entire with you know, much help from my colleagues. And the book did quite well, and I sold some copies here at DragonCon. Really, this all started with DragonCon, so really very cool. So now we fast forward a few more years, and Dan Brown has written another book called Lost Symbol. So those clues from the Da Vinci Code, only WW knows, and the coordinates were giving clues to the fact that his next book would take place in Washington, D.C. And while I was reading this book, which did have cryptos in it, and then I saw there was a character in it named Nola Kay, which was an anagram of my own name. So it was Dan Brown's way of thanking me for helping him with some of the codes for his book. So that was super cool. And this, okay, new information, just released in June, they're going to make a TV series about the Lost Symbol taking place in Washington, D.C., and my character, Nola Kay, is going to be in the TV series. So I am super excited about that. I've asked who's going to be playing me, and Dan Brown says he doesn't know yet. And I said, well, if I have a choice, I'd like it to be Angelina Jolie, because I think she could capture my essence. So, moving on. Crypto. So, I also want to just mention about the NSA effort, you know, why the NSA worked on it. There was kind of this, you know, hey, you guys are so hot, you know, let's see how hot you are. And they put together a team to create, to solve part 4. They couldn't solve part 4, they wrote a memo. And so I contacted the NSA and I said, hey, I have this website about cryptos. Can you send me your information in that memo? And they said, well, no. And I said, well, why not? And they said, well, it's classified. And I said, why are efforts to solve a recreational cipher classified? And they said, well, we can't tell you. And I'm so I filed a Freedom of Information Act request. So that I filed it in March, and you know, just this long thing. You know, they in April they said, "Are you willing to pay search fees?" I said, "Yes." And then in June they said, "Okay, you have been placed in the first in, first out processing queue for non-personal easy cases, but because there were cases ahead of mine, it might take a while. They wouldn't be able to respond in 20 days." So 6 months go by. I contact them again, and they say the case is actively being worked, level of review, blah blah blah. Hang on, and then say another May of next year, and I'd say, how's it going? They say your FOIA is in the final approval stages. Another 6 months go by, again, your FOIA case is in the final approval stages. So I had friends in the government that were telling me, Ivanka, this is NSA speak for go away. And I said, well, too bad. And so I kept contacting them, and then finally I got this big, thick manila envelope in the mail that had redactions here and there, you know, and at the top you can see forward to Admiral Studeman for info, and at the bottom it said approved for release by NSA on May 21st, 2013, FOIA case 61191. That's me. Okay. And so I put it on my website, and again, international news, and they only saw the first three parts. There was nothing about part four yet. So a little bit more information. Sanborn did announce a hint in 2010 that the word Berlin was in there. And you know, we did a lot of, you know, is it Berlin? Is it the word? Is it the city? Is it like number of links? Is that Berlin? And so we were playing with that. And we found out we could get the word Berlin with Visioneer Cipher if we use the keys of shifted and binary, which is kind of cool. But there's nothing intelligible before or after that. We also found lots of other key pairs that would put Berlin there, like subcompact Gorky and other things that, you know, it works, but it didn't give us a plain text. So so then continuing another year or so, Dan Brown releases another book called Inferno. That's me all prettied up with Dan Brown and got a nice autograph there. And then another year goes by and we get another clue from Sanborn. This is the word clock. And this year, something new, when we asked him about Berlin clocks, if he had a favorite Berlin clock, because there's all kinds of different Berlin clocks out there, and we asked him what was his favorite, and he says he likes both of them. Both of them. We're like, what the heck does that mean? So again, this is just information we're getting. So this is a... So I had that one visit to CIA in 2002, the next one was in 2019. It was related, this little picture of the cicada, that was the interview that I was in, and then they went back and they said, okay, we gotta do a thing on Kryptos, because one of the cameramen was seeing all these pictures of Kryptos around the walls. So I got in to see it again, that's me and Ed Scheidt, the guy who designed the Kryptos systems. This is in March 2019, and then I got to take all these cool new pictures, which was awesome, and I've got hundreds of these pictures. If you want, I'll give you the link, and you can go crazy on them. I was doing my best to get enough so that we could get a 3D model created. This is more of the pictures of the guys, and this is, we're still playing with 3D models, but what we want to do is get a full 3D model so then we can test which way the light is showing and maybe shadows. And so this is some of the active stuff we're doing this year. This is some more stuff that Sanborn, when we were in his studio, this clay material is from when he was at CIA. He noticed that when they were shredding documents and then they'd mix them up with a chemical and they'd come up with like this popcorn kind of material, and he noticed if he took that and mixed it with another chemical he could get this clay, and so he would make these wall hangings with this clay and then stamp other encrypted messages into this clay. And so there's various wall hangings all around DC and restaurants and Federal Reserve, and so we're trying to track all of those down to see what other ciphers he's used, to see if those give us any clues. So this is in Sanborn's studio. These are the people you saw in the video. The third guy from the left, some people that know tech culture, is the Mike Godwin, the guy who came up with Godwin's Law. So I drove him down there, and he was kind of helping us brainstorm. There's some other sculptures by Sanborn that we were tracking those down. This one on the right has binary all around it. This is the book that I wrote. There's another great documentary on PBS, Nova Science Now. And Q&A, what you got?
Okay. If you do have a question, and as long as you're able-bodied, please line up here. If you're differently abled and you need me to come out to you, then raise your hand. But we'd like to ask everybody to line up here. And I wasn't quite sure when this was going to start, so I would have had people lining up already.
Oh, okay.
We got about 7 minutes, I think.
All right.
So if you'd like to ask a question, please line up here. Oh, and I do want to mention one other thing.
Sure.
That you haven't... I haven't seen, but it turns out that the NSA, National Security Agency, does have a building in Georgia. It's to the west of Augusta on a military base. I've never seen it in person, but I found it in Google Maps. And the shape of the building is curiously similar to the shape of the crypto sculpture.
Wait, what? It is?
Yes. And if you stretch out the sculpture along the line, then it looks like the building. This is like, it's got these like S curves. So it's worth looking. I will help you find it, because I've found it before.
NSA building in Georgia. But where in relation to
it's
Augusta?
To the west of Augusta on a military base.
Augusta. Thank you, Scott.
And it just occurred to me now, oh, I've seen that building. It looks just like crypto.
Okay.
So when it gave the coordinates, it also said second level. Did you guys get a chance to do any digging or flipping over any of the flagstones to see if there was something underneath?
Yeah, I have gone and stood at those coordinates. It's concrete that's there. If it were a public area, I'd be doing a lot. But since it's inside CIA and there's cameras and... I didn't see anything unusual there. There's tables, there's picnic tables you can drag around, and there's these little metal things about the size of this with a dash across it, which I think is so you can get down into drains and clear out drains when there's water and there's fountains around. It says that layer two, and CIA is not just one layer. There's layers above it, and there's layers below. So there could be maybe a layer down and something in ceiling tiles. Also, Da Vinci Code, he didn't say 38 degrees. He said 37 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds more. And that area I did go to and dug around because there's a geocache that is centered exactly on that location. But I didn't see anything unusual there either. But I looked hard. Okay, mm-hmm. All right.
So, I did a quick Google search when he said to both clocks, and it seems like there's two clocks in Berlin. I was wondering, you also mentioned that they were like hiding the alphabet. I wonder if there are those misspellings, if you protrude non-English words and then put it in front of the cipher, if that actually, because if you're trying just English words, you're not going to find like deliberate mistakes.
Ask the question again.
Okay, so there are like two German clocks that, if you just Google Berlin clock, they come up. And so someone had mentioned that a clue was they hid the English language.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they use non-English words and then right. put a lot of extra misspellings, mm-hmm. does that help change the cipher at all?
Yes.
Like if you just like wrote a program that just protrudes characters.
Right. It is something that Ed and Jim did talk about should the answer be in some other language. You know, they could, like, there was a coffee shop with Assyrians in it, and they could have put it in some other language, but they decided that they were going to keep it in English. But yes, that is a masking technique that could have been used. It's possible.
Thank you.
Hey, the only question I had, I'm pretty sure that you guys already went this route, but how many layers of encryption did you go through? So like, you encrypt the message, and then all he has to do is take the encrypted message and encrypt it again,
right.
and encrypt it again.
Right.
So do y'all go 2,000-3,000 layers in with the computer?
It's possible, and there are, that is a valid encryption system where you start and you encrypt like the first word and then use its letters to encrypt the next and go on and on and on. So it's possible, and we've looked at it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sanborn could come in and say, this is the method, these are the keywords, and it would still be difficult for us because there's so many different variations mm-hmm. of how you could do that. Like Visionaire, the American Cryptogram Association says, well, there's Quagmire 1 and Quagmire 2 and Quagmire 3 and Quagmire 4. So it's possible.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. The question was, how many layers did you actually go? That's all.
I couldn't tell you exactly how many layers we've tried.
Okay.
We've got a couple thousand people that spend a lot of time on it.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
The last one, the question.
I've given that some of the answers to the previous parts dealt with light and shadow and locations. How confident are you that the final clue is just embedded in the text versus...
I couldn't hear you. Final clue what?
Basically, how strongly do you feel that the final part of the puzzle is just the cipher text versus, like, is it like a sundial where on the vernal equinox the shadows are going to line up?
Sanborn does love playing with light and shadow. There was a whole phase of his career that's all he was doing was putting light, like graphs on mountains in the southwest of the United States and doing these long time-lapse photos. So, could be. You know, maybe we need to stand at those coordinates and shine a light and look at the way the letters project on the other side of it to get something. He does have a sculpture where he did that, Cyrillic projector. You have to stand, it's a cylinder at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, where, and it's all Cyrillic text, and it shines a light around the buildings, and if you stand at the right location and look at where it's projecting, you have Russian, English word Medusa, Russian. And that English word is one of the keys to solve it.
This side was pretty cool. I'll call it down.
Okay, so I've got one quick non-cryptos question.
Sure.
In Fallout 76, in order to launch a nuke, you have to do a keyword cipher. Did you have anything to do with that?
Fallout, is this from Bethesda?
Yeah.
I have been through the Fallout shelter that I think inspired that particular thing, but no, I have not personally helped them with ciphers. But if they said yes, I'd be there. Yeah, but it's a good question. All right. Any other questions? Okay. All right. So, summary. My journey from games to cryptos was an unplanned adventure, and DragonCon was what launched me on this adventure. So I owe a lot to DragonCon. So I told you about cryptos, has four sections, three of the four have been solved. It's supposed to be solvable, and my own goal is not necessarily to solve it, but to help see it solved. So if you have a takeaway from this, it's don't ever let people telling you, no, that's not possible, stop you. Keep going, and the search for what you're trying to do may be more valuable than the thing that you're actually seeking. Thank you.